Nice to catch up with Otis Birdsong. Of course, if you're an NBA fan, you know that name because he played 12 NBA seasons with Kansas City, New Jersey, and Boston. And he was the first guard to be paid $1 million in a single season. He also played his college ball at the University of Houston. You know, the one thing I've found, Otis, over the years of talking to basketball players is that if they're a big man, they have a kind of a big man's attitude. If they're a small guy, a guard, they have a small man's attitude. Tell me a little bit about the guard mentality.
Well, the guard's mentality is basically to score the basketball, especially the shooting guard. And to push the ball up the floor and just be aggressive as possible and really enjoy stuffing it in the big man's face.
When you think back on your career, you know, aside from being able to score, you were always able to do that. But I always thought you had great command of the floor. Where did that come from?
I think it was in high school. My high school coach was he patterned his coaching style to that of John Wooden's. So he was very meticulous in regards to the basics. I mean, every year we would work on passing and the fundamentals of basketball. So he really drilled that into my head. And he also taught me how to move without the basketball. You know, a lot of times you watch the players these days, and a lot of them are very skilled and gifted, but they can't play without the basketball, and it's a lost art.
How much of your game was developed on the playgrounds?
A lot of it. You know, growing up playing against older guys, guys I grew up with, very, very good players, in fact. And I would say the majority of my skill level was probably formed on the hard courts.
Yeah, the reason I ask that question is that it certainly allows one to kind of develop as a player, but it also doesn't always bring out discipline. I know in talking to Al Addles one time, he and I were talking about some of the great Helicopter Herman comes to mind back in New York, playground legend back there, but never made it into the NBA. And I asked him why that was, and he said, Ron, he said a lot of the guys that were legends on the playground could not play system basketball. What was he talking about?
Well, he was talking about you have the individual skill to perform at a high level when you're playing pickup basketball. But what the kids today don't realize is once you start playing in high school and college, you have to learn the different sets, not just offensively but defensively as well. And not only your plays, you have to know what your teammates are doing, where they're supposed to be on the floor doing a particular play. And it's tough for a lot of players to learn the different sets and nuances of organized basketball.
Is it hard for a player to learn discipline when that's kind of a free-form game that you play on the playgrounds?
I don't think so. I disagree with that in regards to discipline. Discipline comes from, first of all, your coach and your teammates, and it also comes from within, but it starts at the top. You know, the coach has to be able to discipline these players, especially at an early age. You have to teach that discipline so when they become college and pro players, they already have it.
How did you end up at the University of Houston?
Interesting story. I actually was playing in a Christmas tournament in Winter Park, and the assistant coach for the University of Houston had actually come to Winter Park to recruit another player. And he actually saw me play, and he started recruiting me. And my mom and my family just fell in love with Coach Pate. He was a wonderful coach. He was instrumental in signing Elvin Hayes and Don Chaney initially, and he ended up signing me.
You know, that period of time when you were at the University of Houston and the players that you just mentioned, that was kind of a golden time for the University of Houston. You played in the Southwest Conference when it had, of course, Oklahoma, it had Arkansas, it had Texas and everything. Take me back to the Southwest Conference during those days.
Well, it was tremendous basketball being played in the Southwest Conference. I mean, you're talking about rivalries because our states were so close. And I say Arkansas always had great teams, you know, led by Sidney Moncrief when I was in school. Texas Tech, Texas A&M, they sound like football schools, but back in the old Southwest Conference days, they also had very, very good basketball programs. So, I mean, it was just tough winning on the road. Even when you played at home, it was tough to beat those teams. And those 2 years just really helped me develop as a basketball player playing in the Southwest Conference.
Was the natural rivalry the University of Texas for Houston, or was it another school?
Actually, it was Arkansas.
Oh, really?
You know, we were always able to beat the Texases of the world, and A&M, and Texas Tech, and Rice, and Baylor. But our rivalry and arch nemesis was always Arkansas. I mean, it always came down to the Southwest Conference Championship game, Arkansas and Houston, every year.
Otis, you were a star at the University of Houston, and I stopped to think, you went all 4 years, right?
Yes.
And I stopped to think about your playing there and how good you were. Would you have come out after a year if you had played the way you played there?
No. Actually, back when I was in school, you had the ABA and the NBA. And actually, my junior year, I actually considered going hardship, but I wanted to play in the Olympics, try for the Olympics, and so I went back to school. But I was just having a great time in college. And I know the money is good for these guys, but I think you really miss out on the opportunity to play in college at least 3 years. And I wish the NBA and the NCAA would get together and pass a rule whereby would force these guys to play at least 3 years of college basketball. I mean, can you imagine the teams that Kentucky would have had the last 2 or 3 years if those guys had stayed in school and at North Carolina and at Duke? Oh, man, you're talking about some basketball.
Yeah, but looking at it from the other side and the other standpoint is if a kid is ready to play, and there have been a lot of kids, Derrick Rose that came out early and others like him, and have shown that they could play at the NBA level, is it fair to keep them in school and take a chance that they might get hurt while they're in college, and maybe that would negate an ability to have an NBA career?
Well, two things. It's not the majority of those guys aren't ready to play. There's always an exception to the rule, and Derrick Rose is one of those exceptions, as was LeBron James. There are always exceptions to the rule, but a lot of these kids come out, and they never pan out. Look at this kid at Atlanta, Williams. I mean, he hasn't had a decent career in my mind. I think his name is Marvin Williams. But no, it wouldn't be fair, and neither is it right now for these kids not to be able to go professional after 1 year. I'm just saying I wish there was a rule that would allow them to stay in school for at least 3 years. It's not fair because the rules say you can go now, but I'm saying it would be better for the NBA as well as the NCAA if these guys were forced to go more than 1 year of basketball.
Otis Birdsong is with us on Sports Byline. We're talking about his college and his NBA career. Everybody always points to Tim Duncan and the fact that he stayed 4 years at Wake Forest before he came to the NBA. And I think there is some legitimacy to saying that a player, while he may have been able to play the game, I think from a maturity standpoint, Otis, he's probably a more complete person slash player. Am I correct in that observation?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, Tim Duncan is one of the greatest of all time, one of the most fundamentally sound players of all time, and just a gentleman off the court as well as on the court, and it would be such a role model for the argument of those who wish guys would go to school for 4 years.
When you take a look at the style of play in the NBA when you were there, how does it differ from what we see today?
Well, now you have one or two guys dominating the basketball on a particular team. Whereas when I played, I mean, we had five players that could score the basketball. For instance, when I was in Kansas City, the year we went to the Western Conference Finals, I averaged like 25 points a game. Scott Wedman averaged 20 points a game. Phil Ford averaged 17 points a game. Reggie King averaged 15 points a game. And Sam Lacy, who I was our starting center, averaged around 11 or 12 points a game. So you everybody was able to score back in the time when I played at each position. Nowadays, you have one or two guys dominating the basketball on each particular team.
But isn't that, Otis, because the philosophy has changed in the NBA, kind of the star system? It used to be that NBA basketball, and I remember watching the Celtics, the Lakers, all the teams, it was team orientation. Everybody thought about how the team could better play if everybody was involved. And now what we see is, of course, the first option, the second option, and maybe somebody else. I mean, we talked about the Chicago Bulls teams, and it was always Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan and then everybody else off the bench.
Yeah, but I don't know if you have the players. I don't know if the players have the ability to score the basketball like we had back in the day. You have some great, great players, But I'm talking about as a whole, each starting five back in the day when I played could score the basketball. So you had five options as opposed to one or two options.
But do you think the coaches don't like to have that? Because you know as well as I do, you've been around this game a long time, they talk about an eight-man rotation when it comes to the game, which means they'll go with their starting five and then three guys off the bench. But after that, forget it. They don't care if anybody else can play the game.
No, my point is down the stretch, if you look at a particular team in the NBA now, you only have one or two options to really score the basketball during crunch time. What I'm saying is back when I played, you really had five options. I mean, of course you had the main one or two options, but if the ball ended up in Reggie King's hand in Kansas City for that last shot, I mean, we were okay with that. Reggie could score. Scott Wendland, I mean, I didn't have to take the last shot, feel for it. We had options. That's what I'm saying, as opposed to one guy or two guys on a particular team.
You played most of your career, of course, with New Jersey. What were they like as a ball club back then?
Well, it was a lot of fun, but it was difficult as well. I played 7 years in New Jersey, but I played for five different coaches. That's five different philosophies that we had to adjust to during that 7 year span. So even though I played with some great players, including Michael Ray Richardson, Darryl Dawkins, Buck Williams, it was like a revolving door, players in and out, coaches in and out. So we never, ever could create a sense of stability on or off the court during the time I was in New Jersey.
Was the antithesis of that when you went and finished up your career with the Boston Celtics, because they were always known as a strong organizational team?
Oh, no doubt, man. I ended up there, and, you know, I was amazed at how after the game we would go into the locker room and those guys were not interested in looking at the stat sheet. I mean, it didn't matter. The bottom line was, did we win the game? And that's all that mattered in Boston. And the fans were tremendous. I mean, I can remember walking around the city in Boston and people treated me as if I had been there 10 years. In fact, Red Auerbach told me when I signed with him, he said, Otis, once you wear the green, it doesn't matter if you've been here one day or 100 years. You're part of the family.
One of the things I've always heard, and I heard this from the 49ers during that period of time when they won five Super Bowl championships, Ronnie Lott told me this, and I think it applies to any sport, Otis, and particularly maybe the Boston Celtics because of the success that they had, is that the discipline for the ball club did not come from the coach or the general manager. It came from the players in the locker room, and I think the championship teams have that coming from the players rather than from management. Am I correct in that observation?
Well, it's somewhat. Now, you know, Sam Jones is a dear, dear friend of mine, and he tells me stories all the time about when Red coached. And granted that Sam Jones and Bill Russell, they had the discipline in Havlicek and Cousy, but it started at the top, man. They say Red Auerbach did not play as a coach, and that carried over to the team. And when he became general manager and he stopped coaching, that still applied. So, yes, the players do have to discipline themselves, and Larry Bird was a great leader. So was Robert Parris and DJ and Ainge. But it started at the top as well. I mean, Casey Jones was a disciplinarian. He did a great job.
We only have about 40 seconds left, but when you think back on your fine 12-year career in the NBA, is there a particular moment that's kind of ingrained in your mind?
No, I enjoyed playing the 12 years that I played, and I probably the greatest moment was the day I was drafted. Even though I knew Kansas City was going to take me, they had flown me in. I wasn't in New York. I was in Kansas City for the draft. And that was probably the greatest day because I spent some time in Kansas City during the draft. Then I flew home to Winter Haven, Florida, where I'm from, and my mom threw me a party. And the neighborhood and my friends and everybody came over. And that's probably the most memorable thing of my 12-year career.
I got to tell you, Otis, I love watching you play. You could really light it up, and you had fun playing, and that, I think, is important. Thanks a lot, Otis. Come back anytime and join us on Sports Byline.
Thank you.
Otis Birdsong with us, 12 NBA seasons. He was drafted number two overall by the Kansas City Club and then New Jersey and Boston. He was the first guard to be paid $1 million in a single season, and he played his college ball at the University of Houston. He became Houston's all-time leading scorer, including a nation-leading 30-point average in 76-77. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.